Okay, we are ready to go. Let's chant. And we're going to continue with our study of the nectar of instruction, Upadeshamrita, which basically means giving instruction and nectar. Thank you. Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Acharya, also Teta, Satishi, Shimad, His Divine Grace, Savaya, Chalananda, Bhaktivedanta, Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Iskan, Founder, Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Anantakoti, Vaishnava, Vrinda, Ki Jai, Namacharya, Srila Haridas, Thakur, Ki Jai, Param, Se, Kaho, Sri, Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Sidwaita Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindigajai Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Sanya Mukunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturadam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Yubudmai Kijai Srimati Lasadevi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindigajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Dama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschachate Shatani. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master's divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, Om Ganati Vidandasya Gananjana Shilakya Chakshur Unmiditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet. Oh, actually, that's why I already said that. All right. So, Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, anyway, so let us continue with our reading of the Nectar of Instruction, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So, I just want to mention before we start, in the middle of the second verse, purport of the second verse, I just want to mention that the first two verses of the Upadeshamrita are what we call in yoga practice yama. Yama. In yoga practice, the first two aspects are yama and niyama. When you're talking about the Ashtanga yoga system, yam, niyam, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, jhana, and samadhi. These are the eightfold aspects of yoga. So, yama means and restrictions. So the first two verses deal with restrictions. Like the first verse talks about the pushings, vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, pushings of the mind, the tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words, things that you have to really not give into, tolerate the pushings. You know, the pushings will be there, but you just tolerate them. For example, your tongue may want you to eat something, and you just tolerate, no, I'm not going to listen to you today. Too bad. And it goes away after some time. So that's the first verse. And the second verse, of course, is the deals with the impediments in devotional service, like Acahara, which is the verse we're dealing with today in the middle of the purport. Acahara prayasas cha pajalpa dimagraha jnanasanga shaloyam cha sabhirvakti vanashati. That one's devotional service becomes spoiled by eating too much or collecting too much or over-endeavoring. How do you know if you're over-endeavoring? You're neglecting your sadhana. Prayasas cha, pajalpa, or unnecessary involvement in mundane things, like the news, or politics, or mundane things. Pajalpa niyamagraha, following the rules and regulations ritualistically without understanding and praying to Krishna, doing it from your heart. Or atyohara, which means not following the rules and regulations. So those are impediments. Prayasas cha. Pajalpa niyamagraha, janasangas, taking bad association from people who are not interested in Krishna consciousness, instead of giving them association. We can give people association. Janasangas chaloyam cha. That is, loyam, of course, means hankering for mundane things. I must have this, I must have that. It's like a little kid. Get me this, get me that. So these are impediments in devotional service, and that's the verse that we are dealing with today in terms of the last half of the purport. Okay, with that in mind, let us go to the Upadeshamrita. And actually, okay, I forgot. We're supposed to chant this verse. Nana Shastra Vicharanaikinipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakaraneu Tribhuvane Manyo Shivanyakaro Radha Krishna Padaravinda Vajanana Nandelan Mataliko Pandi Rupa Sanatano Raguyago Shijivago Palako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Okay, so now we can share. There we go. So we're sharing the screen in the middle of the purport, verse 2. So let us continue. Let me just get all the windows in place. There we go. Karanis labor to accumulate more and more money for future generations only because they do not know their future position. Interested only in getting more and more money for their sons and grandsons, such foolish persons do not even know what their position is going to be in the next life. There are many incidents that illustrate this point. This is actually interesting. Story Prabhupada tells once a great Karmi. So what does a karmi mean? Okay, it means different things. One thing is it means one who is engaged in accumulating karma, or reactions. It can mean also one who is performing pious activities to accumulate good reactions. So it can mean several different things. Generally, when we say someone is a karmi, We are indicating that the person is under the rules, or right, not the rules, but under the jurisdiction of karma, rather than Krishna consciousness. Okay, that's generally what we mean. Although in certain circumstances, karma means one who is working on pious activities and following the Vedic karma kanya injunctions. Okay, once a great karmi accumulated a vast fortune for his sons and grandsons, but later, according to his karma, he took his birth in a cobbler's house located near the building which in his previous life he had constructed for his children. It so happened that when this very cobbler, of course a cobbler, for those of you who don't know, it doesn't refer to a dish, something you eat like apple cobbler or something like that. It refers to someone who makes shoes with his hand. Hand and hammer and everything like that. That's what a cobbler is. So this, so don't think it's something to do with something to eat. So it so happened when this very cobbler came to his former house, delivering shoes, his former sons and grandsons beat him with the shoes that he made. Phew. Unless the karmis and gyanis become interested in Krishna consciousness, they will simply continue to waste their life in fruitless activities. You know, that can also apply. I've seen many circumstances where there's a dog or a cat that exhibits the qualities of someone who in his previous life owned a particular house or a particular farm. I remember being in one farm once, and every day the dog would walk around to all the different pastures and the periphery of the farm just to examine things. You know, why is a dog doing that? Because that was obviously the previous owner. So that's what happens with karma. You work real hard and you don't really get the benefit of what you've gotten, what you've made. And you actually may get the detriment. Some of the scriptural rules and regulations for immediate benefit, as utilitarians advocate, is called Niyama Agraha. So Niyama Agraha means you're performing scriptural rules and regulations either for no spiritual benefit or material benefit. Okay, two things it means. And neglecting the shastric rules and regulations that are meant for spiritual development is called Niyama Agraha. So hear the difference? This Agraha, Agraha, A, O. When you got the line above the A, it's pronounced A, and otherwise it's pronounced O, without the line. The word Agraha means eagerness to accept, and Agraha means failure to accept. By the addition of either of these two words to the word Niyama, rules and regulations, Niyama. There's that word Yama again, remember? We said in the beginning of this class, Yama and Niyama. Niyama means positive Niyama means positive injunctions. And Yama, Niyama, rules and regulations. Yama means restrictions. All right, so the word Niyamagraha is formed. Thus, Niyamagraha has twofold meaning that is understood according to the particular combination of words. In other words, if it's Agraha or Ograha, Agraha means to accept for the wrong reason, Niyam Agraha, and Niyam Ograha means not to accept or not to follow. Those interested in Krishna consciousness should not be eager to accept rules and regulations for economic advancement, yet they should very faithfully accept scriptural rules and regulations for the advancement of Krishna consciousness. They should strictly follow the regular principles by avoiding illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication. Reasons for that? Illicit sex, mode of ignorance, bad karma puru, meat eating, mode of ignorance, really bad karma, you know, practically guaranteed an animal birth in the next life, gambling, there's some passion and ignorance there, and it's bad karma, but your mind becomes so much enwrapped with the idea of getting something for nothing. I remember I was speaking to some devotees about Bitcoin before. Some of you may have heard about Bitcoin or Doggy Coin or different types of coins. That's electronic coins. and which are just based upon some electronic entries in different computers. I'm not going to get into the technology right now. But anyway, they're very interested in it, and because they could support themselves, get something for nothing, and some of them lost their shirts, and some of them actually, previous to this Bitcoin thing, were investing in Forex. Forex doesn't mean four X's. It means foreign exchange. And they thought they'd make so much money, and some of them lost their houses and all their money. So we have to be very careful. Look at Yudhisthira Maharaj. She lost everything by gambling. He gambled even his brothers and his wife. Can you imagine that? It's like a fever. It just overtakes you. Like in Las Vegas, for example, which is one of the capitals of gambling in the world, they generally keep a notary public outside of each and every gambling casino. Why? Because persons can sign their car over, and they basically leave town without their car, and hopefully they can afford a Greyhound bus. And of course, intoxication. You know, we don't need to say anything about intoxication. Intoxication is definitely in the mode of ignorance. What can we do? So, one should also avoid association with Mayavadis who simply blaspheme Vaishnava's devotees. So Mayavadis say that basically the Lord's form, personality, pastimes are all illusion. And ultimately, everything is without variety. So, and they blaspheme the devotees. Why do they say? What do they say about the devotees? They're just sentimental. Well, the Mayavadis are just like hard-hearted. So bhukti kamis, that means who are interested in material happiness. We try to avoid those who are interested in material happiness. Mukti kamis, who desire liberation by merging into the existence of the formless absolute Brahman. And siddhi kamis, who desire the perfection of mystic yoga practices, classified as achaharis. In other words, they're doing things over endeavor. For mundane things, because even going, merging in the existence of Brahman is a self-centered pursuit. Wanting mystic yoga in cities, cities means powers, is self-centered. We are trying to be Krishna-centered. Bhukti mukti siddhi kam sakale ashanta krishna bhakta nishkam atai bhashanta. If one wants to be peaceful, then they can't have any of these desires. I want to be peaceful. Desires to expand the mind by perfecting mystic yoga, merging into the existence of Brahman, or attaining whimsical material prosperity are all included within the category of greed. That's lalya, lalyam, intense hankering. All attempts to acquire such material benefits or so-called spiritual advancement are impediments on the path of Krishna consciousness. Modern warfare waged between capitalists and communists is due to their avoiding the advice of Srila Rupa Goswami regarding achahara. Modern capitalists accumulate more wealth than necessary, and the communists, envious of their prosperity, want to nationalize all wealth and property. Unfortunately, the communists do not know how to solve the problem of wealth and its distribution. Consequently, when the wealth of the capitalist falls into the hands of the communists, no solution results. Actually, what happens is the communists, the head communists, end up, what? Accumulating wealth. Maybe not through business, but through their political machinations. So it's the same thing. They're both greedy. They're both greedy, but they have employed different means. So the whole point is to conquer greed, or hankering, or volume. And the only way to do that is by spiritual practice, chanting the Lord's holy names. Opposed to these two philosophies, the Krishna conscious ideology states that all wealth belongs to who? Krishna. Thus, unless all wealth comes under the administration of Krishna, there could be no solution to the economic problem of mankind. Nothing can be solved by placing wealth in the hands of the communists or the capitalists. have a $100 bill is lying in the street. Someone may pick it up and put it in his pocket. Such a man is not honest. Another man may see the money and decide to let it remain there, thinking that he should not touch another's property. Although the second man does not steal the money for his own purposes, he is unaware of its proper use. The third man who sees the $100 bill may pick it up, find the man who lost it, and deliver it to him. This man does not steal the money to spend for himself, nor does he neglect it and let it lie in the street. By taking it and delivering it to the man who has lost it, this man is both honest and wise. That's a typical example that Prabhupada gives. In other words, we understand everything belongs to Krishna, and we don't take it for ourselves, we give it to Krishna. And we don't renounce it. I mean, for example, there was one time a Mayavadi, whether it was a sannyasi or whatever he was, a Mayavadi, and he had a picture of himself taken pushing money away. And Prabhupada said that we could take a picture of him pulling money in and giving it to Krishna. So we want money for Krishna. Simply transferring wealth from capitalist to communist cannot solve the problem of modern politics, for it has been demonstrated that when a communist gets money, he uses it for his own sense growth. That's exactly what I just said. The wealth of the world actually belongs to Krishna, and every living entity, man and animal, has the birthright to use God's property for his maintenance. When one takes more than his maintenance requires, be he a capitalist or a communist, he is a thief, and as such, he is liable to be punished by the laws of nature. Of course, that reminds me of this verse in the Upanishad. Ishavashanidam sarvam yakincha jagatanjaka tenatakshena bunjaha magritha kashasvidhanam. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone is given. And if there's equitable distribution, and everybody gets his quota, then everybody can live very happily in this world. And there's enough resources for everybody, for billions, even more people than we have in the world. You know, sometimes people complain there's too many people. Well, there's the distribution of resources is not being done properly. Some people, most people in the world, are eating meat. And when they eat meat, they're taking a disproportionate share of the world's resources. And that involves global warming, that involves the water in the world, that involves the land in the world. I mean, just practical, you know, just like one unit of meat protein takes up like something like 18 times the amount of land that same one unit of protein, which would be healthier for you, animal protein would take. And, you know, the water resources. You know, I don't have the percentages in front of me right now, but it's many, 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 many more times. You know, so instead of one eats one hamburger or McDonald's or something like that, it's like taking maybe 100 gallons of water used to produce that. I don't remember the exact percentage, but it's a lot. So there's not an equitable distribution of the Lord's or the resources of the world. Some of us have too much. The wealth of the world should be used for the welfare of all living entities. That is the plan of Mother Nature. Everyone has a right to live by utilizing the wealth of the Lord. When people learn the art of scientifically utilizing the Lord's property, they will no longer encroach upon another's rights. Then an ideal society can be formed. The basic principle for such a spiritual society is stated in the first mantra of Isha Upanishad, and that's actually what I just quoted at you. To you. Ishavashamidam sarvam yadgin cha jagatam jagat tena jagatena punjikata magrata kashasvidhana. That's mantra one. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and you should not accept other things knowing well to whom they belong. In other words, plain living and high thinking, as we read yesterday. Krishna-conscious devotees know very well that this material world is designed by the complete arrangement of the Lord to fulfill all the necessities of life for all living beings. without their having to encroach upon the life or rights of one another. This complete arrangement affords the proper quota of wealth for everyone according to his real needs. Needs is the word needs. That doesn't mean what he desires. Needs and desires are different. You know, someone may say, I need, but that's not what they need. That's just what they desire because they've been contemplating sense objects. And thus everyone may live peacefully according to the principle of plain living and high thinking. Unfortunately, materialists who have neither faith in the plan of God nor any aspiration for a higher spiritual development misuse their God-given intelligence only to augment their material possessions. They devise many systems, such as capitalism and materialistic communism, to advance their material position. They are not interested in the laws of God or in a higher goal. Always anxious to fulfill their unlimited desires for sense gratification, they are conspicuous by their ability to exploit their fellow living beings. You know, you can notice how Prabhupada equally slams market economy and communism, because they're both based upon the same motivation, greed, you know, whatever. When human society gives up these elementary faults enumerated by Srila Rupa Goswami, Acharya, etc., all enmity, this is really interesting statement by Prabhupada, all enmity will cease between men and animals, capitalists and communists and so forth. People won't eat meat either. In addition, all problems of economic and political maladjustment and instability will be solved. This pure consciousness is awakened by the proper spiritual education and practice offered scientifically by the Krishna consciousness movement. Wow. Just think about that. This Krishna consciousness movement offers a spiritual community that can bring about a peaceful condition in the world. Every intelligent man should purify his consciousness and rid himself of the above-mentioned six hindrances to devotional service by taking wholehearted shelter of this Krishna consciousness movement. So again, Acharya Prayasas Cha, Pajapam Nimagraha Janach Sangas Chaloyam Cha Sabir Bhakti Nashati. These six things destroy one's devotional service. Eating too much, collecting too much, over-endeavor, talking or hearing mundane things, performing activities, spiritual activities, either unconsciously or for material benefit, or not performing the spiritual activities, bad association, taking bad association, or volume child, or hankering for mundane things. Here is the percentage of water. 1,847 gallons of water to raise a pound of beef. You know what? 1,847, that's a lot of showers. 1,847 gallons of water. Oh my God. That's enough to give you water for the whole year. Basically, you're drinking water. Almost, you're drinking water for the whole year. Let's say the whole year. So here, let's say every day you would drink a gallon of water. That's a lot of water to drink. So that's like 6 years of drinking water. Not quite 6 years, but anyway, it's almost 6 years of drinking water to produce 1 pound of beef. Oh my God. And 25 gallons to raise a pound of wheat. So a pound of wheat can provide a lot of bread or a lot of rotis or chapatis. And a pound of beef, you know, probably supply 2 plates of a steak dinner or something like that. Oh my God. Look at those percentages right there. So that's a disproportionate share of the Earth's resources that are being used unnecessarily. And that's why you have a lot of people in the world who don't have water, don't have land, who don't have food. because of this disproportionate share. And, you know, and also Prabhupada talked about political boundaries between countries. He said everything belongs to God. You know, what is this political boundaries? If there's more land in one country, then people should be allowed to move there and grow things. You know, if one country is a desert country, like certain countries are just like pure deserts. And, you know, what can they grow there? I mean, basically, they could eat cactus or something like that. Okay, so we're going to go on to the next text, which is text 3. And now we get to the positive injunctions, which is really nice. Nice to be positive. And so, let us read it. Utsahan nishchihet daryat tatat karma pavartanat sangatagat sato vritte sadbir bhakti prasidyati. So here we go. Utsahat, by enthusiasm, nishchihat, by confidence, daryat, by patience, tatat karma, various activities favorable for devotional service, pravartanat, by performing, sangha chagat, there's one negative injunction there, giving up the association of non-devotees. It was also mentioned in the last bad association. Sataha, of the great previous acharyas, vritahe, following in the footsteps, sadbahi, by the six, bhaktihi, devotional service, prasidyati, advances or becomes successful. So, here's how we can become successful. There are six principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. And there'll be more positive instructions later on in the nectar instruction. You'll find them. But let's go over this verse. One, being enthusiastic. And maybe we'll talk a little bit how to maintain one's enthusiasm. Two, endeavoring with confidence. Three, being patient. Hard to mix enthusiasm with patience, but we'll explain that. Four, acting according to the regulated principles such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. And that, of course, is Prahlad Maharaj's verse in the 7th canto, 5th chapter, text 23, hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna, etc. Five, abandoning the association of non-devotees. And six, following the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These six principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. I'll read that again. These six principles undoubtedly, means without a doubt, assure the complete success of pure devotional service. And Prabhupada's comments, devotional service is not a matter of sentimental speculation or imaginative ecstasy. Its substance is practical activity. Srila Rupa Goswami, this is a nutshell verse, has, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11, has defined devotional service as follows. This is the nutshell verse of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, which we've gone over before, but we'll read it again. Anyabhi lashita shunyam jnana karma anavritam anukul yena krishnanu shilanam bhakti rutamam. That's also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.167. Uttama bhakti, uttama. In one sense, uttama can mean above ignorance or the topmost bhakti. Or unalloyed devotion unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, involves the rendering of devotional service in a way that is favorable to the Lord. This devotional service should be free from any extraneous motive and devoid of fruit of karma or personal jnana or all other selfish desires. So there's, within this verse, I think I need to go over it. There's actually positive and negative injunctions. Anyabhilashita shunyam means devoid of anything else, any dirty things. Devoid of desire for liberation or just acquiring knowledge for knowledge's sake. Devoid of desire for acquiring mundane things, that's karma adi. Anavritam, free of it, like avritam. And then, that's the negative injunction. And so the positive injunction is to not only serve Krishna, but to serve him according to the way he wants to be served. That's the first point. To be active at it, you know, there's three points. To be active at it. And to do it with devotion, you know, with the idea to please Krishna. Like Krishna says in the Gita, Bhakti Mama Vijanati, Yabanyas Chasmi Tadvata, I can only be known by bhakti. And also, Patram Pushpam Pulam Tuyam, Yome Bhakta Priyachati, you can offer me a leaf of fruit, a little water, with devotion. So in other words, three positive injunctions are devotionally, actively, and doing what Krishna wants. Remember that. That's a very important aspect of this verse. The negative aspect is not being interested in gross or subtle sense gratification or even liberation. Uttama Bhakti, or unalloyed devotional, read it again. Into the Supreme Personality of God, it involves the rendering of devotional service in a way that is favorable to the Lord. This devotional service should be free from any extraneous motive and devoid of fruit of karma, impersonal jnana, and other selfish desires. Bhakti is a sort of cultivation. As soon as we say cultivation, we must refer to an activity and practice too. Cultivation of spirituality does not mean sitting down idly for meditation, as some pseudo-yogis teach. Such idle meditation may be good for those who have no information in devotional service, and for this reason is sometimes recommended as a way to check distracting materialistic activities. In other words, it keeps you out of trouble. You're just like a little boy who's in trouble. You just say, sit still. Of course, you can't sit still for very long. So sometimes there's that injunction. Stay out of trouble. You know, it's better than being in trouble to stay out of trouble. But better than staying out of trouble is to do something positive. Meditation means stopping all nonsensical activities, at least for the time being. You can't stop permanently. Devotional service, however, not only puts an end to all nonsensical mundane activities, but also engages one in meaningful devotional activities. Sri Prahlad Maharaj recommends, and this is again that same verse, about the activities of devotional service, the Navabhakti process, nine processes of devotional service, 7.5.23 in the Bhagavatam. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasham Sakyam Atma Nivedanam. The nine processes of devotional service are: 1. Hearing the name and glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 2. Chanting his glories. Remembering the Lord. 4. Serving the Lord's lotus feet. Worshipping the deity. 6. Offering obeisances to the Lord. 7. Acting as the Lord's servant. 8. Making friends with the Lord. And 9. Surrendering oneself fully to the Lord, like Bali Maharaj did. You know, friends, of course, is Arjuna, like that. And then you got Hanuman serving the Lord. Shravanam, or hearing, is the first step in acquiring transcendental knowledge. One should not give oral reception to unauthorized persons, but should approach the proper person as recommended in the Bhagavad Gita 4.34. Another important verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Tadvidi prani patena patiprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam gyaninas tattva darshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. That is very, very important. In other words, we want to hear about Krishna from those who love Krishna. Because if you hear about Krishna from those who don't love Krishna, those who hate Krishna, those who are envious of Krishna, that subtle vibration, if I can use the word vibration, will actually affect your consciousness. There's all sorts of subtle vibrations in the atmosphere. Like music, subtle, it's not so subtle actually, but subtle vibrations, of course that's generally the modes of nature. But if someone is envious of Krishna, it just affects one's heart. It is further recommended in the Mundaka Upanishad, there's another famous verse, Tad Viganata Sangurume Babigachet, 1.2.12 in the Mundaka Upanishad. To understand that transcendental science, one must approach a bona fide spiritual master. There's the imperative. Tad Viganartum, if one wants to understand, not simply Jnana Viganartum, Sagurum Abhigachet is an imperative form in Sanskrit. Imperative means must, as Prabhupada translates it. You must do it. This is the method of submissively receiving transcendental confidential knowledge. It's not merely based on mental speculation. In this regard, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Rupa Goswami, another famous verse, Paramanda Bhramate Kona Bhakyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadikai Bhakti Lata Bija. In the course of traversing the universe of creation of Brahma, some fortunate soul may receive the seed of Bhakti Lata, the creeper of devotional service. This is all by the grace of Guru and Krishna. That's from the C.C. Majalila 19.151. In other words, Brahmanda Brahmate, we are wandering. Brahmanda means like universe. Brahmate means wandering from one body to another, one planet to another, even from one universe to another. Gets pretty boring. But by the mercy of Guru, one gets this Bhakti Lata Bija. Bhakti Lata Bija is the seed of the creeper of devotion. And so, Lata actually is a creeper of devotion. By the mercy of Krishna, one gets Guru. If one really wants to understand the absolute truth, Krishna will send Guru. It's not going to happen by accident, or it's not going to not happen, even though you want it. It's going to happen when you want it, on purpose, because Krishna's arranging. Krishna's in the heart of every living entity. He's in the heart of the Guru. He's in the heart of you. And when it's time, it's time. I remember before I came to the Krishna Consciousness Movement, I was praying to God. I didn't know God's name at that point. I said, oh, nameless one. No, I said, oh, God, please show me. Help me, God, help me. And then all of a sudden I turn on the radio, and there was Prabhupada chanting. Amazing, amazing grace. Yeah. The material world is a place of confinement for the living entities who are by nature anandamaya. We are by nature pleasure-seeking. They actually want to be free from the confinement of the world of conditional happiness. They certainly do. But not knowing the process of liberation, they are bound to transmigrate from one species to another and from one planet to another. In this way, the living entities are wandering throughout the material universe. When by good fortune one comes in contact with a pure devotee and hears from him patiently, one begins to follow the path of devotional service. Such an opportunity is offered to a person who is sincere. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is giving such a chance to humanity at large. If by fortune one takes advantage of this opportunity to engage in devotional service, the path of liberation immediately opens. One should accept this opportunity to return home back to Godhead very enthusiastically. Without enthusiasm, one cannot be successful. Even in the material world, one has to be very enthusiastic in his particular field of activity in order to become successful. A student, businessman, artist, or anyone else who wants success in his line must be enthusiastic. Similarly, one has to be very enthusiastic in devotional service. Enthusiasm means action, but action for whom? The answer is that one should always act for Krishna. Krishna arte akila cheshta. That's from the C.C. Majalila 22.126. So, you know, all right, I said, how do we become enthusiastic? That doesn't mean we eat a lot of sugar or take a lot of chili peppers. You know, that's not how you become enthusiastic. That's how you become passionate. The way you become enthusiastic is you take association from a pure devotee, hearing Shushusho Shradana Shavasadeva Gata Ruchi. And when you hear Bhavanti Karna Vasayana Gata, the sound vibration goes from the ear to the heart, and the heart starts beating better. That's where the soul is. Bhavanti Vidkarna Vasayana. Tajoshanarashopavargavartmani Shradat Ratirvati Anukrameshati. This is the path that one thing follows after the other. Okay, we are finishing our reading, but then we can take some questions. Let me just mark down where we're finished. This is on verse 3. So I know where to continue tomorrow. Actually, tomorrow is Sunday feast. I'm not sure what we're going to be doing, but we will do something. the same time, same station. Okay, so let me stop sharing and stop forcing you to mute yourselves. And you can raise your hand, unmute yourself, or you can type in the text window. That's up to you. That's your option. Okay, Chichilaika, you have a question. Unmute yourself first.
Yes, Gurudeva, my obeisances. They were separating meditation from devotional service. But I've heard before the expression from devotees, like devotional meditation, that's what we do in Bhakti. Is it correct? I mean, like to mix them up?
Yes. There's what Prabhupada was referring to was just inactive meditation, just sitting and meditating on what is the sound of one hand clapping, or trying to make the mind blank, or meditating on your breathing, or meditating on a candle. I remember before I joined the movement, I would meditate on candles. I saw the white light. Anyway, yellow light at least. Maybe not the white light. But impersonal meditation, one can meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. And of course, that meditation should lead one to doing being active. Because as Rupa Goswami states, which is the verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11, which was quoted today by Srila Prabhupada and by myself, that devotional service should be active, means we use our senses. It should be active, it should be done in a way that pleases Krishna, and it should be done in a way that you're doing it out of devotion, the three standards for devotional service. So it has to be activity. I mean, for some time when we're chanting japa, you know, it's meditation too. But, you know, like Prabhupada said, work now, samadhi later. In other words, and also in the Bhagavad Gita, you have this verse. Oh, what is it? Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagno brahmanuttam brahmatena gantavya brahmakarma samadhan. That if one is absorbed in work for Krishna, that is meditation, that is samadhi, which is basically the topmost aspect of the yoga system. Yama, asana, pranayama, prachahara, dharana, jhana, and samadhi. Okay, yeah, some certain types of meditation. Obviously, we can meditate on the holy names while we're chanting japa, while we're chanting kirtan, while we're working. You can be chanting while you're driving your car. Now, try not to chant japa while you're driving your car. It can be a little dangerous.
Okay. And Gurudev, another question. How do we recognize if there's a selfish motivation behind a so-called devotional service, such as, for example, if I like dancing, and then I say, okay, I'll dance for Krishna.
That's right. Use whatever talent you have for Krishna. And if there's some motivation, that'll disappear. You don't get all bent out of shape worried about your motivations.
Okay.
One can be introspective, but, you know, don't feel all guilty. You know, oh, wow, I'm eating prasadam because I like the taste. Oh, my God, I'm guilty as sin. I'm going to hell. You know, this is not Christianity, you know, whatever. Guilt. We're not supposed to be guilt-ridden. You know, just serve the best you can, and Krishna will take care of the rest. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, and who else do we have? Any other questions from any of the devotees here? Either raise your hands, or hand, not hands, raise one hand, because we don't have a way to raise two hands with Zoom, just we have one hand. That's the sound of one hand clapping. So either raise your hand or unmute yourself or type in the text window. If not, we will end.
Hare Krishna Gurudev, please accept my obeisances.
Lily Kant, it's good to hear from you. What's up?
Gurudev, as we read today that we should not over-endeavor. So when it comes to, or you were mentioning about how people are not intelligent when they accumulate money for their kids and grandkids and things like that.
Yeah.
And sometimes we also hear in the lectures that we should not over-endeavor and we should just look at our needs and only earn that much. And on the other hand, then we need money for the temple. But
yeah.
Sometimes when one is a grihastha, we think, oh, I'm doing it for Krishna, but we keep more and give very little to Krishna. So how to balance it? What's right and what's not
right? Use
your
intelligence. Like I said, don't worry about these things too much. I mean, certainly you should leave something for your children. That's a good idea. But the whole idea is not to go crazy. That over-endeavor means you're neglecting your sadhana, neglecting your service. My answer to that question is just be practical. You know, you have to send your daughter to the university, so you got to pay for her. You have to, you know, give to Krishna. Nice to give to the guru also. That's always nice. So, you give to Krishna, and Krishna's representative, and you know what? Be practical. Prabhupada did not expect us to be impractical. He didn't expect, you know, if someone can make a large amount of money, they should make a large amount of money. But not to live in a, you know, 30-room palace with a different room to sleep in every night. You know, you have some basic necessities. You should live in a nice house, a beautiful house, bring people to your house. You know, that's a good way to spend money on your house, is you bring people to the house and you have programs at your house and you introduce people to Krishna consciousness. You know, that's fine. I wouldn't really get too worried about these injunctions, because then you really get filled with guilt and anxiety. You know, whatever you need, everybody has a different amount of necessities. You know, some people may need to sleep on the floor, and other people may need a big mattress, you know, whatever. You may need 10 mattresses, like that story of the princess and the pea. Yeah, she had 100 mattresses, actually. So whatever you need, everybody has a different necessity. You may need to sleep 4 hours a night. Other people may need to sleep 8 hours a night. I think we just have to be practical. The main thing is that we set a pace for ourselves in devotional service, a pace that we can keep. If you over-endeavor, then you won't be able to keep that pace up for your whole life. Just keep a pace that you can, you know, every day perform your devotional service without getting passionate. You know, you don't want to endeavor for too much for Krishna either sometimes, because then you just lose your sadhana. You know, it's too much externally. Krishna wants your devotion, so you don't want to neglect your devotional aspects of your life. You know, someone has to be practical.
Can I ask one more clarification on that?
Yeah.
Gurudev, how, when temples were, in Vrindavan temple was built and Srila Prabhupada, the ones who were involved, if they were unable to chant and things like that, can we take that example? If somewhere temple is getting built, like in Thailand now there is a project, if someone works very hard to earn money, I mean, we know that one person cannot support, how to balance it out? Like, how
they should be able to chant and have sadhana.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the point. No one should sacrifice their chanting. Probably didn't want people to sacrifice their chanting, because then you lose the people. I remember in the early days there was someone who was so enthusiastic about book distribution, he was pushing book distribution like everything, and then he neglected his chanting, and then he went away for years. You know, he's come back. But, you know, you don't want to neglect your basic practices of sadhana, no matter what. I mean, one day there's an emergency, you know, there's a fire and you got to put out the fire, you can't say, I'm chanting my rounds, Prabhu. Or it's janastami, I have to go to the town. You know, your house is burning down and your wife and children are saying, save us, save us. You know, so it was janastami, I have to go to the temple. You know, you gotta be practical about these things. I mean, you take these different injunctions of the shastras, you know, even Rupa Goswami's injunctions, you take them out of context, you can really become imbalanced. So it's important not to be imbalanced. Okay, thank you for your questions. Now it's time to end. And hopefully we will see everybody tomorrow evening, same time, same station. It may not be a reading of the Upadeshamrita. It may be the class in the temple room. I may read the Upadeshamrita for the class, or I may do something different, like some Bhagavad Gita verse. I am not sure right now. But hopefully we'll see everybody tomorrow evening. Thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.